We're going to continue on with our relationship status series. And so far in this series, we've talked about being single. We've talked about looking for that perfect person. We've talked about dating that perfect person. And this morning, we're going to talk about, brace yourselves, marrying that person, right? Notice I didn't say perfect person. We're marrying that person. So we're going to dive a little bit into the marriage aspect this morning. And I'm going to kick it off with a verse that's a very, very popular verse when it comes to talking about marriage. And it's Genesis 2:24. And it says, "This explains why a man leaves his father and mother and is joined to his wife, and the two are united into one." Now, this is the New Living Translation, but the King James Version and the Dake translations use the word cleave. And that's important because of this next point. Dr. Thomas Constable of the Dallas Theological Seminary, and if you're not familiar with Dr. Constable, he's a very well-known theologian. He's written several commentaries. A lot of seminaries use them in their training. Very well known, and he says this about Genesis 2:24, and I think I have a slide for this. It says, "The couple also needs to establish commitment to one another. Cleaving," remember that word, "cleaving resembles weaving two threads into one new piece of cloth." So two are becoming one. The word suggests the ideas of passion and permanence. Permanence. I want you to hone in on that word. In marriage, a man's priorities change. Before, they were primarily to his parents, but now they are primarily to his wife. Marriage should not be taken lightly, as it is a divine institution ordained by God. Now, marriage is something that I take very, very seriously. It's something I'm very, very passionate about. It's one of the areas that I've studied the most in. Marriage in our communities today has changed and evolved over the several many, many years. I can't give you an exact number, but I remember when you talk to your grandparents or older generations, they've been married for 30, 40, 50 years. How many of y'all have been married at least 30 years? Raise your hand. 40 years? 50 years? Where's Vance? How long y'all been married, Mr. Vance? Y'all hold the record, I think. 68? There you go. That deserves, yeah. In today's society, that's almost unheard of. People treat marriage very, very differently than they did back in the day. Nowadays, marriage is almost treated as something that you do just to do. I mean, really, you're married for a couple years and then you get bored with that person. So as a society, we've said it's okay to go find somebody else. That is not the biblical interpretation of marriage. That is not what God intended the institution of marriage to be. Now, I'm not saying that there are circumstances that would warrant that. We're not going to get into that. That's a totally different series. But for the most part, marriage is, like I just said, a divine institution ordained by God. And that's how we need to think about it. Just as God's love is steadfast and enduring, marriage is meant to be a lifelong bond. Let me say that again. A life, Keith, you taking notes? A lifelong, I'm just picking on my brother over here. A lifelong bond, okay? Characterized by fidelity, selflessness, unconditional love, mirroring the covenantal relationship between God and his people. Marriage is not merely a human intervention, but is part of God's design for man and woman. It serves multiple purposes, including companionship, mutual support, and the spiritual union between God, husband, and wife. God, husband, and wife. In that order. Thank you. Come on up. No, I'm just kidding. Just as God's love is steadfast and enduring, marriage is meant to be a lifelong bond characterized again by fidelity, selflessness, unconditional love, mirroring and covenantal relationship between God and his people. But with all that being said, here, I'm not going to say this, and you all know this, marriage takes work. it's not all unicorns and Skittles. And I say that term because at one of our Halloween functions, I saw a unicorn running down the road carrying Skittles. So I know they exist. I saw it with my own two eyes. But it's not all unicorns and Skittles, okay? It's not always easy. It takes work. So we're going to talk a little bit about that this morning. I got some statistics for you. I'm a numbers guy, so I like to throw numbers up there. And I was actually pretty surprised about some of these statistics, I'll be honest. I thought they were going to be a lot lower. The first one is 79% of married men report being completely satisfied in their marriage. That amazed me. Because if you talk to men, and I'm going to let the cat out of the bag, and we don't do this all the time at Men of Honor, but we come together to complain. That's our outlet. That's what we've got. I'm sorry, ladies, we got to get it out somewhere. So we have breakfast and complain. I'm not going to tell you the substance of those complaints because I'd be thrown out of the club. But for the most part, 79% of married men report they're happy. That's amazing. Additionally, 75%, that number's a little bit lower, but not bad. 75% of married women report being completely satisfied in their marriage. That's amazing. Now, this number also amazed me in the today's realm of marriage. This is as of 2023. They have not updated this statistic for 2024. But 25% of Christian marriages end in divorce. 25%. Now, that's still a very large number. But 25%. And the top five reasons for these divorces are, number one, infidelity. I highlighted communication problems because we're going to spend a little bit of time on that this morning. Because believe it or not, communication is one of the number one things that we need to get right in our marriage to make our marriage successful. Communication is key. And I'm not just preaching to you, I'm preaching to myself. I don't know where my wife is sitting this morning, but I'm sure she will agree to that. Communication is the key. I see people pointing back there, so thank you, Mike. substance abuse, financial stressors, and unresolved conflict. Now, that's just the top five. There was a list of 20 different things, but I just wanted to share the top five. So some other statistics that I thought were interesting is why get married, right? So this was pretty interesting. It's up there, good. So 88% said they got married because of love. 88%. I thought that was pretty good. Making a lifelong commitment was at 81%. Companionship, 76%. Having children, 49%. That was mostly the women, I'm sure. A relationship, I'm just kidding, y'all. A relationship recognized in religious ceremony, 30%. Financial stability, which that surprised me. I figured that'd be a little bit higher up on the chart. But that was only at 28%. And then for legal rights and benefits, 23%. But love and marriage, making lifelong commitment were the highest. And that was very telling to me. I thought that was pretty impressive. So today what I want to do is we're going to take some time to examine four key areas when it comes to marriage. Four key areas. Now, I could talk for days about marriage, but y'all want to go eat lunch and have other things to do. So I'm going to try to keep this contained. But there's four key areas that we're going to talk about. The first one is understanding the purpose of marriage. Understanding the purpose of marriage. We're going to talk about the key principles for thriving, for a thriving marriage. We're going to talk about overcoming challenges in marriage, because some of us have those, some of us. Cultivating a Christ-centered marriage is going to be our fourth point. And we're just going to kick it right off with the first one, understanding the purpose of marriage, okay? And the first one is companionship and support. And if we look at Genesis 2:18, it says it's not good for the man to be alone. Adam was all alone in the garden. He had no companionship. God had given him tasks. He was naming the animals. He was doing all this stuff, but he had no real companionship. So God said it wasn't good for him to be alone. So he brought him, he made him a helper. So it says, I will make a helper who is just right for him. If we go on, the reflection of God's love, Ephesians 5:25, husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. Husbands are to love their wives in the same way that Christ loved the church. Let me say that one more time. Husbands, you are to love your wives in the same way that Christ loved the church. To the extent to which he went for her welfare, was giving himself up in death to provide salvation for her, the church, he gave up his rights yet maintained his responsibilities. The biblical concept of authority emphasizes responsibility, not tyranny, okay? A marriage should not be made of dictatorship, dominion, cruelty, oppressiveness. That's not what God's definition of marriage is. The other point under understanding the purpose of marriage is sanctification and growth. This is very important. Couples need to be together, united, living for Christ together. Proverbs 27:17 says, as iron sharpens iron, so a friend sharpens a friend. Now, there's various translations to this. This is the New Living Translation. But as one iron implement interfacing and interacting with another sharpens them, both, sharpens both of them, so the interaction of two people improves each other. When you come together as a married couple, you are to work and to improve each other. And that's hard to do if the other couple's not open to change or not open to constructive criticism or open to the love that that other partner is trying to show you. Sometimes that is a huge wedge in a marriage. Well, you're not going to change me. I don't need to be changed. Maybe not. Maybe you could improve things or tweak things a little bit, but you've got to be willing to listen and work with one another, hear from one another, take advice from one another. So the second part of this is the key principles for a thriving marriage, right? So we kind of go into why God has us married. God intended man and woman to be together. Okay, that goes all the way back to Adam and Eve, right? So now we're going to talk about some key principles for a thriving marriage. And this is where we're going to get into the communication piece. And before I dive into the communication piece, I feel like I have to share some critical information with you. And underneath this little cloth is my brain. I'm sharing my brain with you this morning. I love y'all. That's what I do. Men and women think very differently. Amen. I know all the men are saying amen. They're secretly nodding because they don't want to go home and get in trouble. It's okay. This is a safe place, fellas. Once you leave, I can't speak to that. Men and women think very, very differently. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, okay? I'm telling you this so that you can understand where each other are coming from. I have two boxes up here on the platform. I'll get to this slide in a minute. I have one labeled man or men and one woman. Now, this is not a fuse coming out of this box, y'all. We're not gonna blow anything up. I know you might feel like that sometimes. I get it. But today's not the day. So, ladies, I'm going to tell you something that's so profound that I'm probably going to get my man card taken away at the next Men of Honor meeting. But I feel it's very important that you understand this because it's going to help you understand where your husband's coming from. There's a nothing box theory. This is real. You can Google it. They've studied it. So if this represents the man's brain, okay, the nothing box theory suggests that inside the male brain organizes their thoughts into boxes as if in a warehouse. I want you to picture a gigantic warehouse with boxes lined up on the shelves. They're nice and neat and in order. They're all labeled specifically, walk the dog, do the dishes, talk to wife. They're all labeled. I should not be telling you ladies this. I'm telling y'all this in confidence. The boxes in their brain stand alone. They don't connect. They don't ever touch. If another box touches this box, it freaks us out. We have to move it immediately. We cannot have anything touching this box. We will go into shutdown mode if another box touches this box. End of story. Their favorite box, and this comes from, if you Google Mark Gunger, he's the one who's kind of studied this and put this out. He's a fantastic speaker. their favorite box, or our favorite box, is called the nothing box. We literally have a box in our brain that is labeled nothing. I'm not making that up. And it gives men the ability to think about absolutely nothing. If you open this box, there's nothing in it. Nothing. We can't put anything in it. If you put something in it, we freak out. There's nothing in that box. Now, to contrast, ladies, God bless you. Again, this is not a fuse. Your brains are wired completely differently. You have a thought, and then a thought, and then a thought, and then a thought, and they just keep going and going. Men can't handle that. We go into overload. It makes us crazy. So I tell all you this to say this. Females tend to have verbal centers on both sides of the brain, while males tend to have verbal centers only in the left hemisphere of their brain. Interesting fact. Females often have a larger, I'm going to use some fancy words, but don't get hung up on them, hippocampus, which is the center of the brain, which controls memory, with a higher density of neural connectors in that area. As a result, females take in and absorb more sensory and emotional information than their male counterparts. Ladies, it's scientifically proven you're smarter than us. I definitely got thrown out of the club with that one. I heard it. It's also been shown that male brains use more gray matter, which is information and action-centered areas of the brain, when processing information, while females use more white matter, which governs higher order reasoning and thinking. This is why females tend to be better at multitasking. We try. Ladies, we do. I gotta speak on behalf of all my brothers here. We do try to multitask. It just 9 times out of 10 ends up in disaster. We try, yes. They're better at multitasking, usually better at interpreting emotions. Have you ever asked your husband to interpret an emotion? That's a roller coaster you don't want to get on. I'm just saying. In contrast, men utilize fewer brain areas and are prone to tunnel vision when they are actively engaged in a single activity, aka the nothing box. So listen to me, and I'm not saying all this to give the men, listen to me, fellas, this is not a ticket to not speak to your spouses. Let me be very clear about that. But when your spouse comes in and they sit down in their recliner after a long day and they're zoned out in front of the TV, and men hear the dreaded question that they all don't want to hear, what are you thinking about? And your spouse looks out up to you with those big, lovely eyes that you fell in love with and says, nothing. He's literally thinking about nothing. I'm not joking. Give him a minute. He'll climb out of it. We don't stay in there long because there's nothing in there. We'll move to the next box when it's time to feed us or we have some other chores to do. Just give us our moment and we'll come around. But I tell you all that because a lot of couples that I talk to, that's an area of frustration. The wives try to have a conversation with their husband. They're wrapped up in their nothing box and just aren't ready to conversate, or literally don't have anything to say at that moment in time. Give them some time. I promise they'll come around, okay? However, that being said, let me touch on this real quick. This is just kind of a picture of what I was talking about in case the string and the boxes wasn't enough. I had to throw a picture up there. The typical male brain, most connections run between the front and the back parts of the same brain hemisphere, which could account for the better spatial skills, motor control in men. Now, I just want you, really, I put this picture up here to show you the differences. I mean, look at how it's not uniform, but it's kind of, again, this kind of follows along with the boxes. It's almost kind of in a little order. Versus the female. And and those of you that aren't married, come see me, we'll talk. If you've never experienced this, you're in for a treat. But understanding the way your spouse thinks goes a long way because it allows you to better communicate and understand how your brains work, okay? When your husband says nothing, they're not trying to tune you out. They're not trying to ignore you. They're not trying to get you to go away for the most part. They're literally not thinking about nothing. Now, on the flip side of that, when you come home, husbands, and your wife is going, bing, 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 bing. Suck it up. That's how their brain works, and it's not going to change. Let me tell you, the best way to treat this is to use this. Listen. 9 times out of 10, that's all they want you to do, is keep this hole under your nose closed and the 2 holes on the side of your head open. They want you to listen to them. And not only listen to them, but listen attentively. Don't be walking around watching ESPN sports on your phone while your wife is bing, 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 trying to tell you about her day. That is not going to go over well. And one thing that me and Jennifer have tried to do, and we're not perfect at it, nobody is. There's no perfect answer to any of this. Let me be very clear about that. You have to figure out what works for you and your relationship and your spouse. Everybody's different. But what we've tried to do is at the end of the day, after dinner, after the chaos of everything is done, we try to sit down and at least spend 15 to 20 minutes together and just talk about the day. How was your day? How was my day? What did you do? What did I do? You know, just have that time to communicate with one another attentively, okay? Active listening, right? And if I think I got Ephesians 4:15. I don't know if we put that slide up there yet. Instead, we will speak the truth in love, growing every way more and more like Christ, who is the head of his body, the church. Speak the truth in love. Speak to your spouse with love. That includes active listening. That includes being open and honest. That includes resolution of conflicts through conversation. I cannot tell you how many times people come and see me and they've had an argument with their loved one and then they just walk away mad at the world or mad at each other and there's no real conversation. If there's no real conversation, there's going to be no resolution to the problem. And what happens when you hold on to problems? They fester. They get worse. You start thinking of ways to kill your husband. You start trying to poison his food. You start trying to figure out ways to put a pillow over his face when he's sleeping at night. It goes on and on. And I joke, but seriously, resolution and problems don't go away without the communication, without the conversation. Is it always a comfortable communication conversation? Absolutely, it's not. I've had conversations with Jennifer that have made me feel this big because of something I did or said. And I've had to come back and apologize. Fellas, you've got to learn to apologize. And I'm picking on the men a little bit, but it's a two-way street. It's a team, okay? It's not just one way. These principles apply to both husbands and wives. There has to be mutual respect. 1 Peter 3:7 says, in the same way, you husbands must give honor to your wives. Treat your wife with understanding as you live together. She may be weaker than you are, but she is your equal partner in God's gift of new life. Treat her as you should, so your prayers will not be hindered. And that basically means valuing each other's perspectives and opinions. Don't dismiss your spouse. just because you don't think it's a good idea or you think it's silly or that doesn't make any sense, make sure that you give an opportunity for your spouse to be heard. That is very, very important. Upholding each other's dignity and worth, recognizing and appreciating your individual differences. We all have differences. We're not the same exact people. God brought us together for a reason. I think, and this is just Matt's opinion, God brings us together with people that we're not exactly alike with. We may have some similarities, but those differences are what makes things interesting. It's how we learn from one another, right? Sacrificial love, 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 7. This is a very popular scripture when it comes to weddings and marriages and relationships. It says, love is patient and kind. Love is not jealous or boastful or proud or rude. It does not demand its own way. It is not irritable. It keeps no records of being wronged. It does not rejoice about injustice, but rejoices whenever the truth wins out. Love never gives up, never loses faith, is always hopeful, endures through every circumstance. Matt's opinion is that is the perfect definition of what a marriage should be. Perfect definition. Putting the needs of your spouse above your own. How many of you do that? You don't need to raise your hands, just something to think about. Putting the needs of your spouse above your own. Demonstrating love through actions, not just words. How many times do you do something to help your spouse out? Do the dishes, sweep the floor. Ladies, maybe you go out and help the husband with yard work or whatever it is he does around the house. Actions. Forgiveness and grace in times of shortcomings. That's an important one. Because there's going to be times where we screw up. We're going to say things, especially if we're sitting around in here for a while, that come out of our mouth because we haven't moved to the box that controls our words. I'm just saying. Remember, the boxes don't touch. Sometimes we say things we shouldn't. Sometimes we do things we shouldn't. Sometimes, again, we react without thinking or praying about it. We do things without having conversations with our spouse and we hurt each other. There's got to be forgiveness. Ephesians 4, 31 through 32 says, get rid of all bitterness, rage, and anger, brawling, and slander, along with every form of malice. Be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other, just as Christ God forgave you. You've got to be willing to forgive each other. Very important. So the third point we're going to jump into is overcoming some challenges in marriage. There's external pressures. Matthew 19, 6 says, since they are no longer two but one. Remember that word that we use, cleave, in the beginning, two become one. The strings bound together to make one. Since they are no longer two but one, let no one split apart what God has joined together. And let me tell you something, especially in the Christian home, in the Christian marriage, the devil is working overtime to break up Christian families. You see it every single day. And I'm not just talking about people that have been married 2, 3, and 4 years. I'm talking about husbands and wives that have been married for 30 or more years that have getting divorces and the homes are being split up. It happens every single day. It's devastating and heartbreaking. Let no one split apart what God has joined together. You have got to keep the outside stressors. There's financial stress, work-life balance, interference from family or friends. That's a big one. Whatever the devil can use to put a wedge in your relationship, he's going to do it. And he knows what it is. Internal struggles, James 1:19. Understand this, my dear brothers and sisters. You must all be quick to listen. This kind of goes back to the communication piece too. Slow to speak and slow to get angry. Slow to speak and slow to get angry. There's unrealistic expectations. There's unresolved conflicts. There's individual issues that affect the marriage. I highly recommend And we're going to get into this in just a minute. But I highly recommend that if you don't have a prayer time set and dedicated with your husband or wife together, a couple, you need to do that. You need to be in the Word together. You need to be praying together. You need to be declaring the name of Jesus over each other, praying for each other when you're not together. You've got to have God in that relationship. If not, the devil's walking around prowling like a roaring lion, and he knows just exactly what button to push and what wedge to use. So the last point is cultivating a Christ-centered marriage. And this, I kind of already touched on this, but you've got to have prayer and devotion. Philippians 4, 6 through 7 says, "Don't worry about anything. Instead, pray about everything. Tell God what you need. Thank Him for all He has done. Then you will experience God's peace, which exceeds anything we can understand. His peace will guard your hearts, minds, as you live in Christ Jesus." Do that daily. Praying together regularly, seeking God's guidance. Again, all the stuff I already mentioned, studying the Word as a couple. Now, it's important to have your individual devotion time. I'm not saying don't do that. You've got to have that time with the Lord yourself so you can hear and He can speak to you and show you things and reveal things. But He'll also reveal things and show you things as a couple as you spend that time together with the Lord. And then serving together is my last point that I'm going to make today. Galatians 5:13. "For you have been called to live in freedom, my brothers and sisters, but don't use your freedom to satisfy your sinful nature. Instead, use your freedom to serve one another in love." I think it's so important for couples to serve together in ministry. Now, I'm not saying everybody needs to run out and go to seminary and become pastors and pastors' wives and do all that. I mean, it could be as simple as serving coffee, being a greeter. Miss Colleen, I'm putting in a plug for greeters. You can be a greeter. If you want to be a greeter, Miss Colleen has a clipboard right now. She will sign you up. But there's multiple ways you can serve as a couple. Find a way to get plugged in together. Volunteering in ministry or community service. Supporting each other's spiritual growth. You know, what are you doing to support your spouse in their spiritual walk and their spiritual growth? Being a witness of Christ's love through your marriage. That's key. Because there's a lot of un-Christian marriages out there that are struggling and hurting. You could be the one example that helps get people, number one, in a relationship with Jesus, but also helps save that marriage and bring it to a good place. Don't take marriage lightly. Those of you that have married for a while, congratulations. My couples that have been married for a while, if you mentor, disciple those younger couples, they need that advice. They need that counsel. You know, don't be afraid to speak into somebody and pour into someone. You know, I remember when me and Jennifer first got married, we didn't know what the heck we were doing. We were in love, you know, 88%. You're in that honeymoon phase. And then you get out of that honeymoon phase after about 1 or 2 years and reality strikes. It's like, oh, Lord, what did I get into? But you're too late. You've made the commitment. Marriage is a wonderful thing. It's designed by God. It's meant to be enjoyed, but it takes work. And very important, the last point I'm going to make before I pray, and I know I've said this a couple times, but I cannot stress enough, husbands and wives, keep God in your marriage. Keep God in your marriage. There's nothing wrong with asking for help. There's nothing wrong with going to your pastor or going to a close friend. We talked last series about having a network. But God needs to be in that network for sure. For sure.